said we're ruled by the talking class. Conversation isn't taught in school the way reading and writing are. We're somehow asked to create great conversation from thin air. These podcasts attempt to focus on great conversation. According to Psychology Today, a good conversationalist needs to understand quickly changing subjects. I've chosen my guests for that very reason. I hope you enjoy their view on the world and their shared experiences as much as I have. So let's jump straight back into the conversation with our last guest. You mentioned learning before. You know, we seem to be in this, the world moves at lightning speed nowadays. I mean, I find this, I've got two young kids and a bunch of interests of my own, a wife that I like to, you know, sit and chat with. Do you find that the learning, there's a need for business, way more learning than there used to be, and therefore it's quite difficult to find that sort of, you know, necessary life balance where you're like, look, I do actually need to go for a run or eat or have a social life. Being an entrepreneur, that can be a massive challenge. How do you sort of approach that?
Yeah, so there's a lot. I think there's a lot with businesses that get learning incredibly poorly. Traditionally, here's a job description, get these skills, and then what the business will do is they'll move on from that really rapidly, and the actual skills that they're recruiting for and the actual skills that the people need and the learning pathway to make sure that the skills that people need to actually do their job, there's just gaps everywhere. That is just like probably – it's probably not even a roadmap, let alone a dedicated, proper, laid out, articulated pathway. And so I would say that probably a large percentage of people are doing jobs and in roles that they've not actually been trained for appropriately with skills that they might not necessarily have. And so I think that there's inefficiency across the board in multiple aspects in that avenue. That's one of the problems that we like to attack as a company, Coherex. That's what we talk about a lot with the military. Specifically, and then how do you lay an appropriate foundation and a data foundation to figure out what is the right skills? Should they be done by people? Should they be done by AI or tasks or software or otherwise? And then how do you capture that information? Then how do you make sure that the training behind that is applicable and it's a good return on investment? I've read quite a few reviews and statistics on this, but generically per 1,000 people in a large scale company, sort of in the order of $20 million a year is wasted on training, and yet only 38% of managers thereabouts feel that training is effective for their staff. So just think of that amount of wastage on large scale and how poor it is across the board. So there's lots of things that we can help and solve with in that particular space right across the board. That one of the issues is that people that have been through a system go, well, I know training, I've done that, I know how to do it. But hang on, you're not a training expert, you don't have that skill. They don't realise that they'll actually make a better return by getting other people in to help them do it. So there's often a lot of bias those that have been there in the training system are going, yep, I know training. And those that have just are just doing a job going, oh, yeah, that training's that'll just happen at the end. Don't worry about it. It's the small thing. I'm more concerned about the new iPhone or the widget or the piece of thing that I can look and touch and feel and don't worry about training. So there's an education piece there, I think, that needs to happen.
I think there is an issue with sort of education in itself. I was speaking to someone about homeschooling, and she's like, I taught my kid up until the age of five before they went to school. And I'm like, okay, So you taught them how to feed themselves, you know, go to the toilet, eat, you know, put their shoes on. So how are you going to connect physics with trigonometry? Silence. I'm like, well, there's a reason why teachers go to school for 3 years, you know. And there's a reason why trainers put together programs. The interesting part is that 38% that managers think is effective. What's happening with the other 68% on that? Or sorry, 62%. You know, are managers choosing courses that sound good on paper but just simply don't apply? That's a weird one. You know, is that something that? How do you address that?
Yeah, on a really individual basis, because the problem's too large to try and solve holistically all at once. It's just getting businesses and people to understand is their skills actually fit for purpose for their current role, and not just now, but for the future. And is that role even current for the business needs, and not just now, but for the future. And so how can you start to solve that problem? Well, let's just not think about their training. Let's just kind of clean slate it and go forwards. Let's lay a data framework to figure out a process and to see a way that we can solve that problem together. That's sort of how we talk about it in that particular space. But, there's a lot of training for training's sake and inefficient training that I think that we're all – the one common thing is we're all really time poor, and everyone says that they're busy. Whether they're actually busy or not, that's just their perspective, and rightly or wrongly. Everyone believes that they're fully busy. So how about we free up people's time by giving them the right skills at the right time that they really need? And I think everyone can see the need for that.
I think there's one of the issues. I think the statistics, something like between 35 and 40% of the jobs that you will do in the first 5 to 10 years of your life when you leave, say, university or school, don't exist today. So how do you as educators train people and the skills they need for something that doesn't exist? It's quite a hard one, I guess. My answer to all of that is you modernize education to teach people how to communicate, collaborate, be as creative as they possibly can, to be open to ideas, to be able to validate useful, not useful, true, not true, whatever it may be, up, down. This sort of leads me on to a couple of the questions that I always ask people. The world is full of specialists, it would appear, at the moment. When you're slightly younger than me, but when I graduated from school, you were sort of taught to be globally minded, and it took you years to be a specialist. And now everybody leaves university as a specialist, and it seems to take them years to become a globalist. Do you see yourself as more globalist minded or specialist minded?
That's an interesting question. Probably I'd say that it changes. It depends on which crazy idea brain that I'm using at the particular time as to which world I'm living in, and I would flick between the two quite a lot. I think that comes probably with my actual personal experience of having gotten to a highly, highly niche but very, very specialised vocation, and then started again from scratch and was into like entrepreneurship and creation and different 7 or 8 different startups and bits and pieces to drag my mind in other ways. So I think I'm a, and like most people, I'd say that they're a product of their environment. So I think my journey has sort of lent myself that my brain probably flicks between the two as and when I need to. But I think going back to some of your early points, in schools there's going to be some foundational competencies that will never change. The ability to communicate effectively, because that's not taught properly in schools across the board. The ability to think critically, that's not taught properly. And it's not taught in a scenario-driven manner, generally speaking. In a scenario, yes, of like there's a train leaving a station here in a maths problem, but not in real-life world industry skills. So I think that there needs to be some readjustment in the education system to make it a bit more relevant to lay a foundation and framework for whatever that would look like going forwards, because no matter what happens, humans are going to interact with humans. That is not going to change. So there's a whole lot of skills that need to be taught to be able to do that in a more effective and efficient manner. Then using all the tools and whether you want to specialise in sort of certain vocation and areas and types of study, of course, you go down that path. But I still think that there's a large part of the education puzzle that's missing.
Have you found that government people that you've spoken to, they can be incredibly intelligent, but do they suffer from sort of that institutionalised thinking? You know, they've been in that for so long.
Yeah, it's some people do, some people don't. But by and large, the longer you stick with it with an organisation, and the larger that organisation is, the more institutionalised in their mantra and their thinking and their way of being you're going to be. But even being armed with, and this is another one of those foundational pieces, being taught about bias and about institutional bias and organisational bias, and just having the awareness to actually recognise that is one of those sort of foundational pieces that I'm getting at that I think is not taught properly and appropriately in schools. So I think just by nature of the fact that you're in one place for a long time, then yes, obviously you're going to have those. But a lot of people, the smarter ones, tend to recognise that about themselves and actually challenge themselves to go and understand what those biases are and how to look at things from a different perspective. A lot of people will talk that talk, but they won't understand what walking that path actually really means.
It can be frustrating, I know. I've dealt with governments in the past. Last question for you. You live in Australia. Who's the most creative person alive or dead in Australia, do you think?
Oh.
People hate these questions, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't know if I can give you one or 27 names. It depends. In a weird way, to answer your question with a question, how do you define creativity and what actually is creativity? Are you taking someone else's idea and making it better, or are you coming up with a brand new idea that went nowhere yourself? How you define that will change your perception and perspective on that, which is why I've struggled to give you a bit of an answer. What I can say is I can definitely talk about some people that were influential that I admire for who they were, and that's people like, you know, that were doing things well before their time. And that can be anything from like people that were playing Australian football. There's a couple of footballers that I used to watch. In fact, there was one footballer I used to watch that it's only literally almost 30 years after this individual was playing that other players are now starting to have the skills that he was showing way back when. To me, that's quite creative. There's people in the arts like Sir Barry Humphreys, an amazingly creative individual on a whole nother level, but had the courage to show the world his creativity. That was just years and years in front of anybody else and what he was doing. And I would call that probably more pure artistic style creation. But there's certainly a wealth of people here that have done some amazing things, and there's a lot of Australian industry that create a whole bunch of like new technologies and manufacturing and stuff like that, but I don't think we're particularly good at selling, because by nature Australians tend to be quite a bit reserved of their achievements, and we're so remote from the rest of the world, it tends to stay here a little bit. But To put a single name on it, gee whiz, I don't know. I think my immediate gut reaction is to basically, I think, go back to Sir Barry Humphreys.
Very cool. I've been dying to ask one of my Australian guests, what do you think of Freddie Laker? Yeah, not as a person or whatever, but as, I mean, he had some ideas in the airline industry that were way ahead, you know, branding, the sort of cheap airline ideas, you know, is he sort of highly regarded still in sort of, you know, Australian innovation circles?
I don't know kind of how he's regarded really, actually. That's, it would be my sort of honest answer in that. Courageous, definitely. Cause it does take, you know, some of those people come at those kind of like to have the ability to have an idea and then take it to actually meaning something and selling something. Is a whole different world of creation. In fact, I wouldn't call that creation, I'd call that innovation. So in my mind, innovation is to take something that's creative but then turn it into an actual product. And innovations is a different word and a different metric, and it's a much, much, much harder thing to do. So you've got to admire the people that are actually innovative.
I've never looked at it like that. I always thought people, you know, for every one highly creative person, there was, you know, 10 innovative people. But I guess you're right in that. No one sort of really wakes up and creates a whole new light bulb, do they? Or a whole new way of lighting a room. You know, I call this daylight, you know. No one's sort of really doing that, are they? But they are inventing huge ways of making light safe and healthy and better for our eyes and things like that. So never looked at it like that. It's been fascinating, as usual. We'll have you on again if you come and tell us more about your company and how that's sort of going. Thank you very much for being on. I know it's quite late where you are, and thank you for staying in the office and chatting with me on the Creativity Pulse. It's been wonderful.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, and would love to do this again anytime. Fantastic, and appreciate your time.
Not a problem. Well, that's it for this week. Join us next week. Don't forget to have a look at the website. You'll find some stuff to help you develop your creative abilities. I'm Joel. Who are you? Where do you come from? And what do you do?